think so, too.
There's something to be said for the people who live in southeast Minnesota getting here first, right? And
there
we
you
have
go.
To wait for the metro people
Isn't
to get
exactly
here.
Isn't that exactly true? Plan ahead, right?
So we're sorry we're starting late, but we'll each introduce ourselves so you know who we're talking. You can have a seat if you like.
Good morning.
And Lois, let me start with you and tell them who you are, where you're from.
Hello, I'm Lois Josephson, Rivers Falls, Minnesota, the 7th District.
And everybody speak up. Just because
I'm Paul, and it's nice to see you again.
Good morning, Paul.
George Sundstrom.
Hello. Good morning.
Billy Young, St. Paul.
Rebecca Covington, Duluth.
Harriet Porter, Woodbury.
Jerry Rogers, Morehead.
Jennifer Godinez in St. Louis Park.
Richard Newell, Woodbury.
And our Vice Chair, Pat Duncanson, is going to be showing up a little bit late, but he'll be here. He's in traffic. And I'm Jane Baylow from Rochester.
Sure, Jane. Nice to see you again.
And Joanne Stately, Plymouth.
Good morning.
Morning.
David Fisher from Minneapolis. It's good to meet you in person.
Bill Brady from St. Paul.
Ardell Brady from Rochester.
And Sonia Cairns from Minneapolis.
Good morning. Good morning.
Paul Taylor from Minnetonka, 30 years with International Mobile Foods.
Good.
Margaret Carlson, Minnetonka.
Good morning, Margaret.
Sylvia Canelon from St. Paul. I'm the student representative.
Very good.
Richard Nista from Ada, Minnesota. That would be north of Fargo, Morehead.
Yeah. Good morning, Richard.
Thank you for making the drive. How was your drive?
Well, actually, like I say, it was a walk across the street from the Kelly Inn this morning because I flew in from Arizona yesterday, and I'll fly back this afternoon. We're taking a family vacation.
Well, that's much better than
I checked it this morning, and it's supposedly 62 degrees is a high there today, so that's the good news.
All right. Would you care to give your opening statement of 3 to 5 minutes, if you would, please?
I would be happy to. Everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Madam Chairman and members of the Regents Canada Advisory Council, I wish to thank you for the opportunity to interview this morning for the Regents position at the University of Minnesota. I grew up on a 240-acre family farm in rural West Concord, Minnesota. In fact, that's where I live today. Not today, but normally, other than my vacation time. I attended high school at Owatonna. I was a member of the FFA and 4-H, involved in other agricultural and student activities. I then attended the University of Minnesota College of Agriculture, where I was an officer at the agricultural fraternity, vice president and acting president of the St. Paul Student Council, and a member of the Minnesota Student Association. I received my bachelor's degree in agricultural economics with a minor in math and statistics. Upon graduation from the University of Minnesota, I attended Officer Candidate School and was commissioned in the U.S. Navy. I was assigned to the USS Galveston, a light-guided missile cruiser out of San Diego, California. There I had various assignments in communications officer, division officer, combat information division officer, as well as administrative officer to the operations commander. The U.S. Navy demanded self-discipline and self-control and prepared me well for my future in business. After the U.S. Navy, I accepted a grain marketing position at a company in Fort Wayne, Indiana called Central Soya Company. I had various leadership responsibilities in grain, grain processing, food manufacturing, and profit center responsibilities for about $400 million. In 1981, I took a position with Grain Terminal Association, predecessor cooperative to CHS, a Fortune 100 company. I managed our country hedging area for a period of time, was vice president of the grain marketing areas and responsible for all grain merchandising for the cooperative, with profit center responsibilities of about $2 billion in sales. I also served as senior vice president of administration, responsible for human resources, communications, labor relations, transportation, and other corporate responsibilities. Prior to my retirement in 2006, I was vice president of public and governmental affairs for CHS. My governance experience outside of CHS was through various agriculture and industry associations. I was chairman of the Minnesota AgriGrowth Council, which many of you might be familiar with, a widely known and respected advocate for Minnesota agriculture. Under my leadership as chairman, we established and focused new focused objectives, hired a new executive director, hired a contract lobbyist, and laid out what I felt to be a very successful and relevant future. I'm still a current board member, and I'm very proud of the current organization, strong financial status, as well as we are creating a lot higher value for its dues payers and members. I also had leadership positions in various other organizations, the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives out of Washington, D.C., Midwest Area River Coalition out of St. Louis, Missouri, River Resource Alliance that was localized relative to river issues, National Grain and Feed Association, U.S. Grains Council, AURI, and other Minnesota and national agricultural and business associations. In 1994, I was honored with the appointment to by the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and the U.S. Trade Representative to serve on the U.S.-Canada Grain, a joint commission on grains. The time and energy devoted to the work on the commission represented a strong role in creating and strengthening fair and free trade, not just between U.S. and Canada, but internationally as well. We were complimented on the report that was provided to the U.S. And Canadian governments, and is still a basis for trade resolutions today. The University of Minnesota has been an excellent resource to CHS, my predecessor company, as well as to me personally. I have helped motivate CHS involvement in many aspects, including scholarships, leadership education, agricultural communications, as well as biotechnology and energy activities. My personal involvement with the university has included classroom presentations, curriculum development, agricultural placement programs, mentoring of students, Kohler Chair Advisor, written and oral testimony for the university, alumni association, as well as the Alumni Legislative Network. I'm also currently serve on the advisory committee for the university's Southern Research and Outreach Center at Waseca, Minnesota. My diverse background allows me to provide informed input and support and strengthen the mission of the university. I have demonstrated the highest of ethical standards, independence of judgment, and the highest integrity. As Senior Vice President of Harvest States, I manage the sensitive and difficult issues of equity and diversity. Again, I was responsible for writing new policies as it relate to equal employment, the American with Disabilities Act, as well as other policies that are related to discrimination. And as a decentralized rural employer, it was very, very difficult and quite a challenge in order to execute that. We set up criteria, set up goals for each of the locations, and to ensure that we could evaluate those goals and provide the appropriate feedback and resolution if there was difficulty. We increased our minority hiring during each of those years that we increased those goals, as well as brought females into the leadership position in our rural locations, which was our priority. Diversity equals excellence, in my opinion. My understanding of the role and responsibilities of the Board of Regents is to appoint the president and create accountabilities, as well as monitor, advise, motivate, and support that individual. Regents clarify the mission, evaluate performance of the institution, and approve major policies, long-range plans and budgets, and other related activities. The regents have fiscal accountability to the state, to the legislature, and to the citizens of Minnesota. A regent must avoid the temptation to micromanage, where the president is responsible for the administration and management of the company, has been delegated that through policy considerations of the Board of Regents. The individual regent must professionally honor the responsibilities of the Board of Regents and maintain loyalty to the entire university system. The regent must be fully informed about the university and responsive to an ever-changing environment in higher education. The region must maintain the highest ethical standards, foster openness and trust among stakeholders. As a regent, I would work in an environment which individual initiatives and ideas can prevail. I believe in empowering others, establishing accountabilities, and promoting a teamwork approach for addressing challenges and opportunities. I have the passion for supporting and strengthening the university's three-pronged mission of research, education, and engagement. At the end of my term as a regent, we would recognize a financially stronger, a more accountable premier public research university. And with that, I will be happy to take any questions that the group would have, and thanks for the opportunity.
Paul Thatcher.
Your pose was interesting. You said something, candidate in my 28 or whatever this experience said, and that was you established the metrics by which you would be judged on your service on the board come the end of the term.
Yes, sir.
And I find that enormously commendable and interesting and appropriate.
Good point. All right, Paul Taylor.
Alan, you mentioned AURI.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is not all of us around the table are familiar with it. Fortunately, myself a little bit. But talk a little bit about the AURI connection with CHS and how you feel that kind of a partnership on a go-forward basis can help to support commercialization of new ag opportunities.
Sure. It's Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. It's, I think, still home based in Crookston at this point in time, and has been, I think, probably since the beginning. They're basically a spot where ag innovation ideas can be brought forward. Many times in food manufacturing, food processing, or other related ag ideas, they are supported by the state legislature and by other contributions by various businesses and enterprises to expand and grow Minnesota home-based, hands-on type of agriculture. I don't know how many products they've commercialized, but many products they've commercialized into various types of small business, and many of which have become very successful. They have incubation centers in a number of areas and work closely with the University of Minnesota as it would relate to providing that venture into new agriculture-related businesses.
Is there an example of a particular CHS, AURI partnership?
We worked with AURI on biofuels, on some issues that relate to biofuels. We have worked with them at our soybean processing plant at Mankato in relation to taking soy protein and adding additional value to soy protein from that particular location. And other applications very similar to that.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Sonia Cairns.
Thanks. You've had huge and important leadership roles in the field of ag over your whole career. How would you best leverage that focus to the broader interests of the university and the state beyond agriculture?
Well, I think, have you... As I tried to present my opening comments, I tried to emphasize agriculture, but I also tried to emphasize other areas of responsibility in relation to having the accountabilities relative to finances, managing operations that relate to having a relatively large budget or large sales situation. I also referenced my human resources administration involvement with communications and other related areas. Basically, I think that one of the most important things for the university in today's world is to be managing our financial side of the issues. And when I say that, I don't mean necessarily dramatically cutting what we spend, but making sure we spend it smartly, that we have, through the budgeting process, ensured that we've incented our people in the fashions that create the kind of environment we want to have at the university. I think we have a great institution, and I think that institution will and has to get better in order to compete effectively in this world we live in. So I think that's especially important, and I think what you've got to do, be able to do, is to be able to quantify the expectations and ensure that every single leader within the university and the various colleges within the university have very specific incentives that relate to growth, communications of what they're doing and how they're going to accomplish it, and how they're going to seek out additional funding in one form or another for the university to become a little bit less dependent upon the state legislature.
Okay, thank you.
Richard?
Could you talk a little bit about how you see the role of the Board of Regents, I mean, the governance role versus the management role, and talk a bit about what you think are the good attributes of a board, or conversely, what can be a problem with a board?
That's a pretty wide question, mm-hmm. But I think basically, if you get down to the basics, and that is that the Board of Regents have governance responsibilities to ensure that the mission is laid down clearly, that the long-range plans are laid out clearly, the budgets are laid out clearly, and most important of all, appointing or hiring the president of the university who is responsible for managing and administering the responsibilities that have been laid down by the Board of Regents. The Board of Regents is policy guidance, and I'm also going to emphasize the importance of feedback, because regents are spread out. There's a reason why regents are spread out through the state of Minnesota, and that's for an opportunity to get feedback and bring that back to the university. So I think the feedback is extremely important. The clarification of the mission, the policies that are established, and the clear definition of what the president's responsibilities are and where that line is drawn. That does not mean that the president is not open for input, but he's open for input in the fashion that makes both good business sense and is not micromanaging or second-guessing what has been designated as his or her responsibilities.
How do you feel about types of communications the Board of Regents should have with the legislature?
Well, I think that the only way that the university is going to continue to either maintain or appropriate share of revenues from the state legislature is ensure that there is a very solid communications plan focused specifically at the legislators and their constituents. I'm not exactly sure what takes place today, but I know that any opportunity you ever have to sit down with someone, communications is always on the list of concerns that is identified under in any organization. If that's communicating with your legislators or communicating with the Minnesota citizens of what value the university has, or communicating with the students on campus or the faculty or the staff or whatever. So just as a broad statement, communications is extremely important. There needs to be some way that there is a flow of information back, because they are very accountable to the legislature who represent the citizens of Minnesota, and that needs to be very clear. The university, in my opinion, communicates well and has a good story to tell, but it's got to be told over and over and over again.
All right, David Fisher.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Anderson, you have, I think, very eloquently articulated some of your vision of what you might do as a regent, as well as in your application have set forth some guiding principles that I think are very helpful as well. In executing the vision and competing for the future, you list a number of things: helping the university stay on a path of revitalization, better leveraging available resources, and the like. I'm just wondering if you could better describe for us how you would accomplish some of these objectives.
Okay. Well, I think that some of the key factors, I think, that the university if it's challenges, create opportunities as we relate to that particular comment that I made. Demographics of this state and nationally are dramatically changing. We have less students coming to the marketplace. We have more, or at least as many, college and universities seeking out those students. We have to be better at what we do. We have to exploit the opportunities that are available to us, and not at the detriment of the rest of our either our community or MNSCU educational system, but ensure that we are presenting the best image possible and providing an opportunity to ensure that that students and families and the state recognize that. We have financial responsibilities in this process of revitalizing the university. I don't think anybody here can sit and say that the state legislature is going to dramatically increase the University of Minnesota's budget. And it's probably going to be quite the opposite. Over time, they will continue and should continue to have a major influence and a major portion of the contributions. I think, I don't know what it is right now, let's say it's 15%. The university gets 85% from other sources. Communications, as I mentioned earlier, I think is especially important in this revitalization process. We have a huge story to tell. We keep our students first. We need to explain that. We need to ensure that the university is presenting the kind of image, and that people understand that it costs money to run a university of the quality that this university is, and what it is going to continue, and what it is going to be in the future. But we have to spend the money smart. We have to be alert about that. We have to ensure that we have a way of dealing with a finite amount of resources. And I think that's going to be a big challenge in helping execute that.
Thank you.
Paul Thatcher.
I'm glad you expanded on that communications thing. We had a customer in here yesterday who said that the university belonged to everybody and the university belonged to nobody. And I think that's because the great lights of the university have been hid under bushels. And the common thread, it seems to me, in your background and experience has the common thread of communication, and I would think that that's an attribute and a contribution that it appears to me, if you look at the current composition of the board, might well be missing in a service that could be offered. Having said that, let's assume that you're successful in your quest for a place at the regional table, and at a meeting one day, one of your colleagues said, "You know, quite frankly, we need to take some time and seriously consider the possibility of the privatization of the University of Minnesota." Would you call the Knott House and ask for that region to be hauled off, or would you say, "What an interesting idea. It's worthy of consideration"?
Well, I think as history of a land-grant university, it would be a huge mistake for that to happen. But conversely, how do you learn about the strengths and weaknesses of your competition by not debating what are the strengths of those institutions that are completely private and not public in nature? So I think the debate and the discussion, I think, is probably appropriate, but I would hope that not one person on that board would seriously consider moving in that direction, because I think that the asset that Minnesota has in the University of Minnesota, through its functions and its contributions, must be protected and must be brought forward. And that's why I made that comment earlier, that I would hope that we're always going to have some percent, appropriate percent, coming from the state legislature because it is a state institution. 98% of the research done in the state is done at the University of Minnesota. Land grant responsibilities that it has, as well as being, and they are, I went through some things as far as how they're doing in the area of trying to be a premier research institution and university, and they are making good progress. Need to make better progress, probably. But so to answer your question more specifically, I think it's appropriate to talk about it, but not for the reasons of making any change.
Okay. Billy?
Yes. I commend you for coming back from Arizona. This is an important step. No, well, you're not the first one to have done something like that, but I still think it was a very neat thing to have done. Anybody thinking about the university and approaching the task of governance has to face the huge problem of money. And you made a reference in your earlier talk about monetizing some of the research from the Ag Department. And could you comment about your feelings of how effective the university is in monetizing the results of some of its research and what perhaps could be done to find this as another source or an improved source of funding?
Well, I'm going to respond. It's an excellent question. Excellent questions are hard to answer, I think.
Well, I didn't want to give you an easy softball. Come on.
But anyway, I think the university would say that it's very, very difficult to monetize a lot of the research that is done because it's to be done in the public good, depending on how it's structured, how it's financed. On the other side of that, I saw a number someplace that, is it over 200 patents have been from the university over the last whatever period of time, relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
So they're going to hit some good ones. I think some of those will be on energy. Some of those will be on food and food safety.
They'll be on stem cells.
And the stem cell issues in relation to that, some of the joint ventures with Mayo and others, I think are going to create some great opportunities along those lines. And I think we'll hit some jackpots, but I don't know where they'll be. Specific on the ag side, they have made some major breakthroughs in various varieties of crops, biofuels. On that advisory capacity at the Waseca station, I think they have 24 or 26 different plots of grasses and legumes that they're watching and growing and trying to potentially commercialize some of those into uses for biofuels and other activities. So I didn't really answer your question as I'd like to.
From the policy position, I mean, do you see this as being a realistic point of view for the board? Things come from directions from the top.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think we're going to hit some home runs. We've hit a number of home runs in the past.
Yeah.
Medtronic, the relationships with those and the pacemaker and other things like that have been home runs. HIV AIDS, that's been a home run. So we're going to have some of those. Some of those I hope will be on the ag side, but I would guess many of them will be on the health and food and nutrition side. Food pharmaceuticals, if that be the say it properly, is a huge opportunity for research universities to be able to take a leadership role.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Cherry.
Thank you. I'd like to give us a little bit about your viewpoint about the educational mission of the university, how they're doing, and what you see for the future in any ways it might change.
Well, over the last few years, I've had some mixed feelings in relation to going through the re-emphasis, if that be, of the university in, let's say it more like raising the standards, if that be a way of saying it. Probably what used to be, maybe when I entered the University of Minnesota and the College of Agriculture, it wasn't a hard process to get into the University of Minnesota. Now it is a difficult process and a challenge, and it's only what I'll say that the superior students that really have an opportunity to do that. Now, is that good or bad? I think that when we have such a strong community education system, in-school system, that it's good. as a general statement. And I think that the learning experiences they get at the university are excellent. I think that each curriculum has to be looked at and ensure that it does the best. If the community college or Minuscule or even some private colleges in the state of Minnesota can do a better job, we should consider that may be the best alternative. So we cannot be everything to everybody. Now, on the other side of that coin, on the ag side, we have people standing in line to want to get into the university in ag education. We have a shortage of ag teachers. And I'm not saying that the region's responsibility is to make that change, but it's sure appropriate to discuss that with the College of Agriculture and the president and other leadership at the appropriate time, maybe on a one-to-one basis, to ensure that those things are thought out properly. So it's not a yes or no. I think they're on the right track. I think they need to do some fine-tuning, and I'm sure they will with the right input. Okay?
All right. Richard Istey.
Yes, sir.
Billy, pretty well asked the question I wanted to, but I'll flip to another one. Your background experience has been more the chief or the decision maker, the manager. Now you're flipping over to the other side of being board of directors. Is that transition going to be a little difficult, or do you think that you're fully prepared for that?
Well, I think... Well, being fully prepared for anything, especially something as big as a region of the University of Minnesota, I think would be probably naive on my part to say so. But I think if I take the pieces of my background and I apply those to governance issues and how it would appropriately guide and create the kind of environment for success, I think that transition can be reasonably easy outside of the issue of becoming extremely familiar with the university. I mean, I have worked with the university for years, but do I know the inner workings of some of the activities or how things all fit together or what policies need to be addressed or looked at in a governance responsibility? But I do understand finance. I do understand the importance of accountability and communications, and I think I can apply some of those immediately. They have various committees. They have six standing committees of the regions. One of those is finance, for example. I would hope, even though I don't try to impress on you that I'm a bean counter, because I'm not. But the point I think is that we need to be able to benchmark, set goals and expectations, probably more aggressively than what we have in the past, in order to create the success that we need to have. So I think I can handle that, and I think I can transition into that. If I end up being on the committee of staff and faculty, for example, that's also a committee that I can contribute because of my HR and administration and people skills. So, yes and no. Okay.
All right. George Sundstrom, please.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes, sir.
In your closing remarks of your opening statement, you made the statement, and Mr. Thatcher referred to it, that when in the end of your first term that the university would be stronger financially than it is now. And later, I wrote down, you made the statement that we need to quantify expectations. I would like you to expand on that. What did you mean by we need to quantify expectations?
I'm not exactly sure what context I used, but basically I feel extremely, extremely strong about the goal setting, benchmarking against other universities and colleges, and or whoever does a good job of something, you benchmark against it to ensure we can. Have we looked at outsourcing? Have we looked at other kinds of situations that might create a better opportunity? Is there some sharing opportunities with St. Thomas or whoever else it would happen to be in order to increase the quality of education at the University of Minnesota or its research or its other related areas? Part of the budgeting process currently, as I understand it, relates to setting and quantifying goals, and those are financial goals, those are probably equal employment diversity goals, there are other related goals. that are set out for each of the units, either administrative units or educational college units. And that might be in amount of research dollars are going to glean. It might be in accomplishing various types of things. There's where things need to be definitively quantified and always laid out in such a fashion that it's something to reach for. Quality of education, quality of research, and quality of the communications and outreach. And that's where I was coming from.
Good, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Joanne Stately.
I'm right here.
Hi, Joanne, I'm sorry.
I'd like to ask you about your idea about the value and our investment in athletics at the University of Minnesota. Why is that important?
Well, I think there are some that have a tendency to think we spend way too much money, way too much efforts, way too much time, way too much everything else in our athletic programs and not enough time in educating our students. I think that's a very minority viewpoint. My viewpoint is basically one that you have to have the correct kind of balance. You've got, if you're going to be a premier institute, a premier research, education, enterprise, you have to have the balance that's necessary in order to be as strong and as good as other universities and colleges in your same category or goal area. So I think athletics is extremely important. I think that at times we need to be more open. We need to communicate better relative to being able to look in the window and see all of the things that do take place at a great university like Minnesota. The gender diversity programs that we have at the university that have been providing excellent leadership opportunities for both men and women within the state, and I think those are extremely important. I personally am of the opinion that athletics is team building at its finest. And I say that at grade school level, to high school level, the college level, to especially through college. And I think that has to be a part of the university's function. I think it is a balancing situation where we have to ensure that we can be as open in the process as we can be so that we don't have difficulties in relation to PR problems, because they're so easy to create in relation to athletics. So I don't think I quite answered it, maybe what you expected, but I think it's extremely important. You need to have a balance, and I think we do a good job as a general statement in our athletic programs.
Mr. Anderson, if you are elected and meet your own metrics for your first term, mm-hmm. would you commit to come back to this table in 6 years and seek a second term?
Well, I'm going to say yes at this point. I think it's like anything, Jen, that it's important to us to recognize that you want to be as effective as possible. I'll only be 72 or 71 6 years from now.
The point is,
if I can contribute and be effective and have accomplished some of the things that I think I can contribute and accomplish, I would definitely want to come back and ask for or reconsideration of appointment to the Regents. Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, Harriet.
You have touched a number of things that are near and dear to my heart at the university. One thing we haven't talked about is the interdisciplinary research initiative. Are you familiar with the university's efforts in that direction at this point in time?
Can you expand just a little bit on that
Sure.
for me?
There is a huge initiative at the university as part of its overall strategy to facilitate interdisciplinary research across campuses, across functions, disciplines, fields, however you want to define them.
Like the Mayo situation or
Mayo
other related?
Mayo is an integrated model.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Is that a fair way to describe?
Engineering and medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
or the Center for Spirituality and Healing and the School of Education. You know, organizations within the university that don't typically talk with each other. So do you see value in that from the perspective of diversity of thought? We talk about diversity from a different perspective, but let's talk about it from diversity of thought.
Well, I think if I just take off on the diversity of thought comment that was in your last sentence, I think that's one of the major advantages of a university like University of Minnesota is that you do have exposure to so many different thoughts and ideas and so many opinions, and that you encourage those and that those create opportunities. I think all of the colleges need to work closer together relative to things that they may have in common. And they might be small things, they might be larger things. I think that I'll even go one step further and say that we even probably need to work harder in trying to find relationships outside of this the campus environment. And obviously that's with business, but it's with other institutions. In and outside of the state as far as that's concerned. Again, we can't be everything to everybody, but I think the idea of some of these focused research and involvement and activity, I think, would be excellent. And we do some of it, and we do a good job on it, I think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lois?
Last question. My question goes directly to your closing comments. National organization with many years of experience dealing with cutting-edge research developments to advance CHS's business. Relationships with institutions that do research outside the boundaries of Minnesota and with business also. Talk a little bit about what you would bring insight-wise to the university about that circumstance, please.
Well, first of all, I agree with you. It's an absolute necessity that we leverage business and the university and other institutions. We just recently, for example, on the ag side, reduced the amount of cattle and the dairy operations we have. I think we still have one up at Crookston, if my memory serves me. But anyway, point up as an example is that, you know, Wisconsin has a real strong dairy program. We're right next door. Our lands are somewhat similar. Our cattle are somewhat similar. Our products are somewhat similar. Logic would tell me that there would be a great opportunity for sharing with the University of Wisconsin relative to issues like that. And I think the same thing would apply to businesses outside of the state of Minnesota. There are a lot of research, and if you look at especially the areas we identified earlier that are going to be especially important in medical, we have a lot of medical in our area related to research, but nationally we have opportunities. Food safety, what is more prevalent and important to create relationships and ventures with private business and otherwise. And again, some of those will mature into revenue opportunities, some will just mature into having a higher quality research, a higher quality student, and a better story to tell, but they're all important.
One short.
The University of Minnesota has the largest population of Chinese students out of mainland China. Some of our citizens and those in the legislature who think they occupy seats that could be occupied by our citizens, number one, and number two, that we're educating the competition. Do you think that program ought to be continued, and do you have a contrary view?
Well, I guess I don't know the numbers that you're referring to, other than we do have a very large...
It is the largest.
Yeah, we have a very large Chinese population at the university, and I don't know how many of those are U.S. citizens, Minnesota citizens, or transplants.
No, it's the largest population of Chinese nationals on any campus outside of the nation of China.
It's been intentional.
Yeah. I guess I don't. I'm
just interested in your reaction to it.
I don't. I guess I would. I didn't realize that. I realized we had a very large population of Japanese, in India, Indians and other non-black minorities at the university. I think the university has a global mission as well as a state and federal mission. But, you know, I can't say is 10% the right number or 20% or 30% or 2% or what the number happens to be. But I think we need to keep in mind that we have a global mission. Now, I had an opportunity, and it's probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, there were a dozen or more either deans or senior people from universities throughout China here on the campus meeting and talking about issues that were important both to them and to the university. And I just have to make some assumptions. There have been some exchange programs that relate to those kind of visits. So I think it's positive, but I guess I can't relate to how big a program that should be or even is when it comes down to reality.
I was there.
All right. We want to give you a few minutes for a closing statement, if you'd like to do that.
Very good, Jane. I just had just a couple sentences, if I could. I received a real quality educational experience at the University of Minnesota, and every time I sit down and either visit the university or talk about the university, I feel even stronger about that educational experience. And it prepared me to have a lot of fun and a successful career, and I thank them for that. I have the desire, the commitment, and I keep using the word passion, I guess, for the University of Minnesota. And I think that the companies and or associations I've worked with, I've helped create a passion as well for the University of Minnesota. Minnesota AgriGrowth, for example, one of our pillars of support is the University of Minnesota in particular, outside of production agriculture, outside of Department of Agriculture and agribusiness. We've tried to continue to do those kind of things, and I guess I think it's about time I give something back from all I've taken and all the companies I've worked with have taken, and I would be honored to be considered and put forward as a candidate for the Regents position. And with that, I thank you very, very much, Jane and the group. So.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.